Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. With the election coming perhaps as soon as July 2, the party machines are moving onto campaign alert. Elections are enormous logistical exercises, not just for the politicians, but for the backroom operators. With massive effort put into researching voters' opinions, into crafting advertising pitches, and increasingly into reaching out to people via phone canvassing and social media, as well as direct mail. George Wright is National Secretary of the ALP. In a former life, he was instrumental in the 2007 union campaign, which was highly successful, against John Howard's work choices. He will be Labor's campaign director for the coming election, and he joins us today. George Wright, are you expecting a double dissolution election, or do you think when it comes to the point, these crossbench senators will fold on the industrial legislation?
Well, it's, Michelle, that's principally a question for the crossbenchers. My responsibility is to prepare for all likely eventualities. So at the moment, my preparations are very much focused on a double dissolution election, as the Prime Minister has said that he will head to if he doesn't get his way in the Senate. So I'm putting all my physical and thought time into being prepared for that. If that doesn't eventuate, we'll prepare for the next possible eventuality. My experience of these things is there are certain things that are in your purview to influence and certain things that aren't, and best to focus on those that are. But I think this is a little bit off topic, but I think the amount of energy and resources and time and thought that is expended by everyone involved in politics in an environment where you don't have fixed terms is actually quite ridiculous and wasteful. I know there are other considerations, but I think certainly from the perspective of a party organisation, fixed terms would be a very good thing.
That's an interesting point. Is Labor actively in favour of fixed terms? It's really gone
I'm speaking from a personal perspective here. I think that my counterparts in the other parties that are operating in, regardless of what their official party policies are, would probably have the same personal view as me, that I think there are some real advantages for fixed terms for the political process and probably for voters as well.
Now, coming back to the election, would you prefer it to be on July 2? It has been said that's Malcolm Turnbull's preference, or would you find it better to have another 2 or 3 months preparation?
I'm ready for a July 2 election.
Get it over with. How different a campaign do you have to run against Malcolm Turnbull than would have been run against Tony Abbott?
It will be quite different. In a lot of respects, it will be the same. As you know, there's two sides to a campaign. There's what you present and articulate and argue about yourself, and then what you encourage people to think about for your opponents. So on our side of the ledger, we've got a very strong policy platform that we've been working on for some time that is coming together well. So I think from how Labor presents its pitch for government is there will not be much change. Obviously, Malcolm Turnbull and Tony Abbott are quite different personalities. You can see from the polls that the public's attitude to those two individuals is quite different. So we've had to recalibrate, and we will continue to recalibrate to give us the best possible chance against the opponent which we'll face, and the campaign will be a different campaign than it would have if we were facing Tony.
Different in what sort of ways, broadly?
They're just different. They're different people. They're different propositions. I think if you want to get a sense of how we would have campaigned against Tony Abbott, probably have a look at the campaign that we ran in Canning. Tony Abbott was well known, was very well known to voters.
And unpopularly known.
Yeah, largely, yes. And in fact, he was never a popular leader in popular leader terms. There was a particular type of campaign that you that you hope would work in that environment, whereas this is going to be a bit of a different proposition. But the other thing you will observe is that attitudes to the government and to Mr. Turnbull have been changing quite rapidly, and they've changed quite rapidly over the course of the 3 months of this year. So exactly where it all lands, even at the start of the campaign, I think is still, there's still work to be done, and certainly where it lands by the end, there's still a lot of work to be done.
People still like Malcolm Turnbull, though. When you have a popular leader, have you got to avoid playing the man?
Well, I always avoid playing the man, but it is legitimate. It is a very important position, and the personality and of the person holding that position is important, and it is a legitimate thing to focus on. And that won't be different from any other election campaign.
What do you think will be the best issues for Labor in this campaign, and what will be the most difficult?
I think we have strengths in our commitment, a long-standing commitment as a party to health and education. I think the commitment we've made to fully fund the Gonski program is very important, both in terms of the nation, but electorally we will campaign hard on that. Health, they try to cut it a million different ways, but it's pretty clear that the Liberals are focused on dismantling the Medicare system and underfunding health. That will be a key strength for us. I think our housing affordability policy is a key strength, and we will campaign hard on that. So I think our climate change policy again is an area where we would see as a strength, and I think also a strong focus on jobs and a strong focus on particularly in the regions is important, and we will be strongly focused on that.
You mentioned housing affordability, and that of course takes us to negative gearing. Now Labor got a lot of positive marks for having a tax policy,
yep.
A series of tax policies indeed. But I just wonder, the polls in terms of negative gearing don't seem as good as they were right at the start. Do you think you can stop the negative gearing turning bad for you?
Yes, I do. I think it's a good policy. I think it's a sound, well thought through policy that is supported by people who've done the analysis and done the work. And I think good policy in the end will make good politics.
So what do you think are going to be the really difficult areas for you?
Well, that'll be up to someone else, I think, not me.
I'm sure you've been thinking about it. What about general economic management?
I think that whatever the challenges are in that area, I think that we, with Chris and Tony Burke and Bill and the whole team, I think there has been a lot of work gone into having a cogent and credible position on the budget. And I would say, would strongly argue that right now we have a stronger policy position on that than the government does. So our job is to get that right, and I think we're getting it right, and we should not be shying away from articulating with confidence our position on the budget and our position on economic management. So if that is an area of contest, we will welcome it, and we will articulate very strongly what we think is a sound and well thought through and responsible and credible policy, none of which I think you could say about our opponents at the moment.
Another potential area of, actual area of difficulty for you is union power, union influence on Labor, on Bill Shorten. How are you going to neutralise that issue?
Well, I don't think it is a secret to anyone that Labor has a long standing relationship with the Australian trade union movement. That's something I'm personally very proud of, and I think it's important to our party. I also don't think it's a secret to anyone. I think anyone who saw Bill at the press club, Bill was a trade union official and is proud of the work that he did as a trade union official. We've had the obscene sight of him being, not just him, but a number of other Labor leaders being hauled before a royal commission. No adverse finding against anyone. So the fact that the government and Mr Turnbull and Mr Abbott before him would choose to try and attack us on this will not be a surprise to anyone. And how we will defend it is we will stand on our record. We will stand proudly saying that we do have an interest in the welfare of working class Australians, and the union movement is a proud part of that.
Today's campaigns are more than ever before about leadership, focused on leadership. There has been, over the past couple of years, a lot of criticism of Bill Shorten's leadership, a suggestion that really he is not competitive as a leader. How do you deal with this?
Well, it's just not true. It's just not true. Bill Shorten has seen off Tony Abbott. Bill Shorten is now... has his party, the party that he leads, in a very competitive position with someone who everyone was predicting would, you know, wipe the floor with everyone. And I think people who underestimate Bill's capacity are doing it at their own peril. Don't look at what the government say about him. Look at what he's actually done and what he's achieved. And every hurdle that has been put in front of him, he has got through. And I think he's very focused, as we all are, on giving ourselves the best possible... We know we're underdogs, but giving ourselves the best possible chance at the next election. So I have absolutely great faith and great confidence in Bill and his capacity to perform.
But
and
the polls suggest the community is not relating to him himself. Why is that?
I think... I again, don't completely accept your proposition, but I think he certainly was in a stronger position in those terms than Tony Abbott was. He came from behind Tony Abbott to in front of him on that measure. He's certainly gaining ground strongly against Mr Turnbull on that measure, and I think those things are heading in the right direction for us.
You mentioned that Labor is the underdog, and when one talks to Labor Party people, they seem to think that you'll pick up seats, maybe quite a few seats, but you won't make it into government. Is that your view, or do you think that there is a chance that Labor could actually win the election?
I think there is a chance Labor could win.
How big is that chance?
Big enough to put everything we have into it. I think I don't think, you know, we've seen election outcomes in Victoria, we've seen election outcomes in Queensland, where all the pundits have been on another train. What we all should be doing is focusing on doing the best possible job that we can, and I think if we do that, we are in a very strong position to be competitive. I will be running this campaign to win it.
If we have a July 2 election, we'll have a forever campaign, endless campaign.
Yep.
How difficult is such a campaign for the leaders? Who do you think it'll favour? How difficult is it for the party machine to sustain itself over such a long time? May 11, perhaps, till July 2.
All election campaigns are difficult. You know, you've been involved in a few yourself. You know, it is a very physically, emotionally, mentally taxing thing. Who handles it better? Who knows? I mean, the last long campaign, I think, was the, was it 84? Or
yes, Hawke.
Peacock Hawke.
Yes.
And I think Peacock surprised a few people with his performance over the course of that campaign. Being in the opposition, one of the things that happens in a campaign is that there is an effort on those who, you know, basically the media, to give equal time and equal standing to the two parties. That is an important thing for an opposition. I'm looking forward to that, and the fact that it's long, you know, I welcome it. To be honest, I think we're ready. You know, we'll go as long as we have to go to get there.
And you think your leader is the stayer in the race?
Yeah, I do.
Campaigning has changed a lot over the years. I wonder if you could just give us your views on the relative importance, influence these days of national advertising, which used to be the big thing, direct mail, social media, other tools of campaigning.
Massive change. But it's not just campaigning that's changed. Communications has changed. And, you know, we're doing a podcast here from a publication that's not one of the ones that you worked on for a long time. Is it? So just the way people absorb information has changed. The way they access information has changed. And increasingly, we've got a heavier and heavier influence. The key is to be where people are. That is the key. If they're watching telly, you've got to be on telly. If they're on the internet, you've got to be on the internet. If they're using a landline, you've got to be on a landline. If they're using a mobile phone, if you want to talk to them, you've got to be on a mobile phone. So, and in a sense, our activity is in some ways reactive. It's all about just getting to where people are. So huge change, and change even between. So one example. So it's a different thing, but there will be change from what we did in 2013 to now. TV is still important. It's still very important. But one of the things Labor has always had a strength in, and we're working very hard to increase our what we see as a competitive advantage in is our direct contact with voters, people-to-people contact and communication, mostly through volunteer networks. We worked very hard on that in 2013, and we will work even harder on that in 2016. We will put more resources into that as a proportion of our overall resource in the campaign than we have in the past, because in a cluttered information environment, we think there is a premium on face-to-face and personal contact in campaigning, and we will look to maximise the personal contact that we have with voters.
How do you do this? Is this door-knocking or...?
Door-knocking, telephones, more targeted and individualised communication across the internet, knowing more about who you're talking to and what they're interested in, and making sure you're getting the right information to them that they are actually interested in. So we have a large email list of people who subscribe to our publications and are in email communication with us, and we listen to what they say to us. We look at what they read, and if we send them something on health, do they read it? If we send them something on climate change, do they read it? So we gather information about what those people are interested in, and we try to...
How do you know whether they read it?
Well, whether they open it or not. It's not whether they email you back or not. These are people who have actively subscribed to our service.
Yes. And they're not, of course, ALP members. Anyone can subscribe.
There's
so you get
hundreds of thousands of them.
I wish they were. Dear Michelle, letters from
absolutely.
Sincerely George.
Correct. So what we listen to what they say to us, and we take notice of what they're interested in, and then we try to make sure that we're not just sending them a whole lot of rubbish about things they're not interested in. We work to make sure that we're giving them useful information about the things they're interested in, and we would ask those people to from time to time pass that information on, to talk to someone else about it, to become involved in a campaign on that particular issue. So it's quite.
Is that work all centralised here in Canberra, or is it done in various centres? And it must be very labour intensive.
It is. It's mostly done down at the campaign level, in individual campaigns. We do a lot here as well, and it is labour intensive. But there's also a technology element to it, and if you've got the right people who understand these mediums and live in them themselves, you can make it work, in my experience. But a lot of it also happens at the local campaign level. where they're building volunteer teams, they're building networks, they're phone banking, they're door knocking. So a lot of it happens at that level too. And one of the hard things is to sort of, I've found, is to coordinate it between the sort of central and making sure you get, you turn those things into genuine human contact and engagement. So we're getting better at that. It's been clunky at times in the past, but we are getting better at it.
There is, of course, increasing use of phone calls.
Yep.
But do you use actual people talking to people, or do you use recorded messages?
We always prefer to use people talking to people. There is the robocall thing is something that, you know, everyone uses, and we do use that a bit too. But as an example of that, of our sort of reliance and our preference for people-to-people contact, in the 2010 campaign, we made about 70,000 people-to-people phone calls from volunteers to voters. In the 2013 campaign, we made 1 million volunteer calls to voters, and we'll be looking to build on that in this campaign as well.
Your callers must be a bit robust, because they'd get some pretty negative responses, you'd think.
Not as much as you would imagine. Of course you do occasionally, but most of the contact, you know, people range from being polite to actually welcoming it. You know, the thing about a person is you can get to ask a question, and you can get to put a view, and often those calls will be followed up with information sent out about something that's relevant to the particular voter. So and they're volunteers, you know, they're not someone being paid in a call centre, they're volunteers, and by and large the volunteers keep coming back to do it, and we don't have lots of people in tears because someone said something nasty to them. They actually like it, and so it's good.
Now, the things you've been talking about really go to grassroots,
yep,
local campaigning. How do you think the balance between the national campaign, the leaders out talking,
yep,
about issues, events, yep, and so on, and the local campaign has changed over the years? One gets the impression that, say, in the 80s, the national campaign was dominant, and yep, maybe since then it's gone more local.
I think it is a bit more local, and progressively more local, as you get, you know, one of the things technology does is, on top of the face to face, is does give you an opportunity to sort of target and refine and your activity to more and message to more specific markets. I think it's getting more and more local, but
and that would
the national is still important.
That would presumably mean also your individual local candidates,
very important,
are more important perhaps than they were 30 years ago.
I can't tell you how important they were 30 years ago, but I can tell you they're very, very important now.
What would you say in terms of a percentage, average percentage, that a good candidate can make?
There are candidates who you see who can hold back swings, and there, you know, what percentage? I'd be sort of, you know, you might, I don't know, 3, a real good one. Who knows though?
You spoke earlier about needing to be where the people are, but isn't it quite hard to find where some people are, like a lot of young people who've tuned out of politics, just are not,
yep,
interested?
Yep.
What do you do about them?
I'm not sure they were ever particularly tuned in. Like, that's, so have young people changed and tuned out of politics? No. I think there's obviously some changes, you know, changes in the way people use media and where they get their information from. But I think one of the things is more generally, and I think this is even more so with younger people, is It might be right to say they're not particularly interested in politics, but are particularly interested in the issues. They are, you know, and I think this is a general thing that is happening more broadly in politics, is people are less engaged in the sort of the grand narrative contests, but are more and more engaged and passionate about particular issues. So they sort of tend to issue shop a bit more than they would party shop, if that makes sense. And if you're an effective communicator, and then you've got to start with where people are. And a lot of what we do in that space is try to talk to people about and communicate to people and engage with people about issues that they actually care about. And
is the fair level of public cynicism about politics and politicians that we see these days a handicap when you try this engagement?
Not necessarily. The people aren't cynical about all politicians. Not necessarily. But the key, again, is start with the issue. Start with the issue. And build the conversation and the from there.
Your
politician has to have credibility on the issue. They don't necessarily have to be liked, or not necessarily have to be a pop star, but they have to have credibility on the issue. So that's particularly important, whatever that issue is.
One feature of all modern campaigns is they cost a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
Even though there's quite a deal of public funding. How are you finding the task of raising money? And a lot of your money, of course, comes from the unions. Do you have any difficulty personally in accepting money from the CFMEU, given all we know about it?
No, I don't have any problem at all. They're an important part of the Labor movement and the Labor Party. They're affiliated to the state branches. No, I don't. I don't. More generally on fundraising, we just work hard, just keep working hard. We're always in a situation where, at least as long as I've been around, where our campaign will not be as financially as well resourced as our opponents. The business community, and large businesses in particular, are really the backbone of funding for the Liberal Party. That is one of the reasons we sort of put the emphasis and the effort that we do into our on-the-ground campaigning and our volunteer networks. So we think is our strength that we're drowning in rivers of cash from the top end of town? No, it's not. That's more our opponent's sort of gig. Do we feel we've got a better connection into the community and have an ability to mobilise people in communities at the grassroots level? Yes, we think we've got an advantage over our opponents there, and we put a lot of effort into it.
How much did you raise at the grassroots last time?
The small donors to the Labor campaign in the 2013 campaign as a group were the largest single contributor to the campaign.
Can you give us a figure?
I'd prefer not to, but they were the largest single contributor to the campaign, bigger than any corporate, bigger than any individual union. They were the largest as a group, the largest single contributor to the campaign.
And you'd expect more from them this time?
I'd hope for more. I'd treat them with respect. And I don't expect anything. We will certainly be giving them the opportunity to contribute. We'll be arguing how important this election is, because it is. But in the end, they're individuals who we hope will contribute, but it will be up to them.
George Wright, thank you very much for talking with the Conversations
Podcast
today.
Nice to talk to you, Michelle.
And thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another interview soon. This is Michelle Grattan.